bullshit, it's all just dumb gay politics. America's gotten kinda whack, but we're not gonna let it go down like that, cause we got a dumb gay podcast, a dumb gay political podcast. We probably don't have all the facts, but we got opinions and we'll probably backtrack. That's why it's a dumb gay podcast, a dumb gay political podcast. Ooh, it's all shit, it's all shit. It's all shit. It's all shit. I mean, are we gonna die? I don't know. You're extreme. I am extreme. It's all shit. This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. This shit is Trumpanus. T-R-U-M-P-A-N-A-N-A-S. What? I don't know. I don't even know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dumb Gay Politics. I'm Julie.
And I'm Brandy.
And this is the podcast where we talk about the week in politics like we're talking about the week in reality TV.
And politics, meow meow, has literally been a 24/7 reality show this week, right?
Oh, my God. I mean, I've been riveted.
Well, I haven't, because the it's the impeachment inquiry hearings for anyone out there who's lucky enough to not know. And let me tell you, watching it is like watching fucking paint dry, okay? You're riveted because we don't watch Bravo anymore, so now we will grasp on. We will watch two grasshoppers fighting.
Ooh, two grasshoppers fighting would be so exciting. This is kind of like watching two grasshoppers fighting. It's like, you know, you wait for the moments where the Republican shill tool pandering cunt twats get on and pretend and say their speeches that were written for them by Stephen Miller, and they're being paid off, and you can tell. And I've just been enjoying, you know, the Devin Nunes of it all.
Yeah, I mean, you always enjoyed politics even before we started this podcast, so I understand. For me, it's not checking the boxes. Maybe because it's the House and not the Senate. I need Kamala Harris. I need the glamour. Yeah. I need the glamour.
Right. There's no glamour.
And, you know, I need even Dianne Feinstein. The glamour of Dianne.
Yeah, there's none of that.
Now, it's no small irony, though, that BravoCon was this weekend. And
sorry.
When we're talking about politics like we're talking about reality TV, politics has been a full 24/7 stage, and yet I'm still jealous of everyone at BravoCon who would rather pay $500 to sit in the back row and watch 60-year-old women dance to Tardy for the Party than watch these fucking hearings. I'm like, I get it. I get it. Tardy for the Party is what, 2010? At this point, and how dare you not play Money Can't Buy You Class?
Girl code.
I mean,
also,
they always hate on Luann. They always, I know, it's so stupid. Always hate.
Tardy for the Party's timeless. Girl code's timeless.
Google me.
Google me's timeless. You know, they're timeless masterpieces of adult contemporary pop. And I think, you know, it's sad because they really, they're wonderful pieces of music.
Well, fuck BravoCon and join our Patreon, guys. If you're new here, we have a Patreon podcast, $1 for 1 hour, $2 for two different hour-long podcasts. We've been on a cleanse, and we've been on the sober tip. Our J-Lo 10-day challenge ends fucking Wednesday.
Oh, my God. Again, my body is like breaking my back. It's breaking down. It's saying, it's saying thank you. I can feel,
yeah,
obviously,
you look good. You do.
In disgusting ways, it's saying thank you.
You look healthy. You're glowing.
You look good. You look very healthy.
Well, good. I mean,
the cleanse has been, I feel that we're hydrated.
Well, we will be on the $2 Patreon on Thursday. Our go off the cleanse, go off the 10-day J-Lo challenge is making SpaghettiOs from scratch.
Yes.
And by making, I mean meow meow will be making them. We watched a YouTube video on how to do it from healthy junk food.
Yes.
They say to take ziti, right, meow meow?
Right. Cut them into little, you know, circles.
So you basically slice up the ziti so it makes little O's for the SpaghettiOs.
Right.
Because we're not trying to fucking eat Alzheimer's disease, okay? I love SpaghettiOs. I love Chef Boyardee. I stan canned pasta. And we can't with the nitrates. We can't, and we won't. So we're going to turn it. It's going to be Chef Boyar Meow Meow.
Chef, ooh, I like it. I will say for the 10-day challenge, you know what it did do?
What?
Since we've had to eat so much meat and by meat I mean chicken, fish, and beef.
Yes.
The cooking of the meat has been upped.
Oh, you've been stepped up your cooking game.
Yeah, and so that's been fun.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing with any of these challenges, I feel like, or diets, is you learn in like a new way of cooking and like spices instead of butter and whatever. So anyway, but it turns out, sweetie, we're not going to have to use the ZD because Meredith from our Patreon sent to us some actual pasta rings that are already prepared. Meredith
Gurr.
So she said, they're not organic, but honestly, cutting cooked pasta into rings is for losers. Sorry, not sorry. One of your faithful 14, Meredith. Fucking Meredith nailed
it. That's so
funny. She nailed it. By the way, Meredith, not for nothing, we don't give a fuck if the pasta's...
No, organic. That doesn't matter.
All we really care about is basically, because the recipe calls for Campbell's, because Campbell's makes SpaghettiOs. So it calls for Campbell's creamy tomato soup. So now we're back to the same issue, which is nitrate central.
Right.
So that's all we really care about is getting organic creamy tomato, which we will do probably from Trader Joe's.
It'll probably be Imagine or Pacific.
Exactly.
Those are the two brands and of organic soup.
Their creamy tomato is delish and tastes just like...
It's good.
Yeah. They copied Campbell's. What can you do?
Very
Meredith,
good.
You killed it, Gurr.
Yeah. I mean, that's great.
Now,
yes,
we have some very important business to get down to. We want to give a special shout out to one of our favorite Patreon subscribers, Colleen Egan. And we are going to give her last name. So I don't care if she's hiding in the closet. She's a 10 times lesbian hiding in the closet with three husbands. And she's like, don't tell anyone I listen to Dumb Gay Politics. I'm like, too bad. Your last name's on blast, Colleen, because you fucking made Scrunchy 19.
I mean, you know, Scrunchy 19's coming to an end relatively soon.
Very soon. 6 more weeks.
And there were some things I had written down that didn't really come to fruition.
We still have time.
That's true. Now. I will say this.
We didn't refer to our list very much.
No, but there's something in my wallet.
No, mine's... I have it on a check.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Oh, that's what didn't come.
Yeah. So now, I want to say this, however.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't even matter now. You know why? Because this made Scrunchy 19.
Exactly.
This was...
It's been a banner year anyway, quite frankly, but
yeah, that's
growing
true.
And learning
that is
and
true.
Growing pains.
For sure.
So it's Scrunchy 19 has not let us down, but Colleen.
This leprechaun found a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and it is in the form of this.
Yeah, I mean, the useless feet were clicking up the heels, Colleen. When I tell you the leprechaun legs were toot-toot, toot-toot, she was clicking the heels. So Colleen, basically, we went on our Patreon podcast and we said we wanted to try, we're going to try these different celebrity alcohols.
Mm-hmm.
And because we were drinking this mezcal by the guys from Breaking Bad.
Right.
Bryan Cranston and the other guy, or Aaron, whatever his name is.
Aaron Paul.
And so, and we don't even drink tequila. We're more whiskey, cognac, vodka.
Mm-hmm.
But this mezcal was great.
Yeah.
And it was fun and it was expensive and whatever. So we got on this kick. And then I said that I have always coveted this certain tequila that sits at the top of the top of the shelf. It is top of the pop's shelf. And it's so beautiful. And I've always wanted to try it. I've always coveted it. And when like Jason Moss or Christy or someone got us like a Saucy gift card and I saw on Saucy that it was so expensive, this tequila.
Yeah.
And so it's called Casa Azul. It's in this beautiful blue and white bottle. Mama looked it up. We're on the Patreon. We're just shooting the shit. Colleen is like, that's my favorite fucking tequila. I will not die if you don't try that. I will not end my life until you try it. So she basically sent it. She tried to send it to our mailbox. The French people didn't take it. So then she got us a gift certificate. You guys, this tequila is so expensive that even accepting a gift certificate like this from someone is already like, go kill yourself. Give Colleen her money back.
Right.
But we couldn't. No. I want that goddamn tequila in my goddamn throat. So I was like, I'm sorry, Colleen. I mean, I literally apologized. I sent her a note and I was like, I'm sorry, Colleen. I mean, I'm really sorry, but I got to use this thing. We got to get this. So we ordered it, Colleen. I want you to know they have to deliver it in person because you have to be over 21. Mammy's never fucking here. God knows. I'm surprised her neighbor who stole the bike didn't come take the tequila. So then she's like, literally the other morning, she's like, I'm going to get the tequila. It's in Santa Clarita. I'm going to pick it up. Bam, school shooting.
Yeah. Santa Clarita, shut down.
I mean, and even if it wasn't, it's clearly inappropriate, like, at best, and
oh, believe
and
me,
tone deaf at worst, it, to be like, going to get my big expensive tequila.
I did think to myself, like, well, I mean, now's probably a good time to go there. But then I thought, no. That would be, I wouldn't, how could I live with myself going up to the place and being like,
yeah, and that, you know, was really sad.
And I that mean, was awful.
It really was just like, wow, hideous. the level, like, that every single parent must be like, when is my school? I mean, by the way, every parent listening, sorry, just kidding. You should assume that your school is going to happen, because every school in this entire country is going to be have a shooting. It just is. And it's like awful. I just was like, that really hit me. I was like, that this is, I feel sorry for everybody who has to like deal with that problem, because it's not going to get solved unless you homeschool your kid or send them in with a bulletproof vest.
Right. They're making bulletproof backpacks.
Oh my God, that's so dark and so dark. Sad, but it's a good idea. Hey, sharks.
Hey, sharks. Hey, sharks.
I mean, honestly, it's a great idea. But Colleen, it got, you know what? What happened was Meow Meow got crunk with the place on the phone, because it was like, ain't nobody driving out to Santa Clarita to pick up God's tequila, okay? The shit is Jesus's tears when he was on the cross being crucified. That's the level of this tequila. Probably men with agave plants are putting spells and doing whatever the fuck they're doing down in Mexico. It's heaven on earth, and it needs to be delivered in the manner in which it deserves. So Meow Meow went way Jewish real quick on the ass, right, Meow Meow?
Yeah, I mean, I basically was like, hello. Hi. I have been waiting for this tequila. It's been 2 days, and there's two different notices on my door. I don't know what I'm supposed to do, but I can tell you this. I work. I'm not home. I mean, I don't work. That's a lie. However, I'm not home. And when you said you're going to be here, you weren't. And when I said I was going to be here, you weren't.
I wasn't.
So, exactly. So, and when I said I was going to be here, I was, but I didn't answer the door because I have a lot of issues. Now, listen. I don't want
most importantly that I don't have the tequila yet.
So can you just leave it here? No. Oh, no, you can't. All right. Well, here's what you're going to do. What do you need? Oh, you need an adult to sign for it? That's fine. I have an address for you. It's our place of business. Okay. This is where I want you to send it. And she was like, okay, that was it.
Colleen, we have the tequila. It's 3 feet tall. We almost made love to it.
It's, I don't know. I'm going to be alone with it tonight.
It's huge. So. It's huge, Colleen. It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. I believe that at night it grows arms and legs and it's going to become alive.
I have spent that amount of money on alcohol before, only cognac. And nothing, and I mean nothing, has made me feel the way this bottle of tequila makes me feel.
Yeah.
It is so fucking upper esh in every way.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not thirsty. It's not screaming. It's understated.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's cool.
It looks like, it doesn't even look like it contains, it looks like a piece of,
it looks like art, it has ashes.
Ashes,
right.
Or a vase from the Ming Dynasty.
Right, exactly. A chinois / Spanish vase.
Yeah.
Well, you really nailed it, Call. You really nailed it. And we are glowing. Like,
glowing.
We're literally, so we took pictures of it. We did a photo shoot with it. We were like, we're clout chasing. We're clout arrival. We're clout owning. We have the clout.
It's called Casa Clout.
Yeah, the Casa Clout has arrived.
Mm-hmm.
It's here. We have it. There's no more chase. The chase is over. And you know what? Some people think that's all you care about. No, we care about the sip. And we did do one.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oof.
It's good.
She described it. She said that there's a vanilla.
Accurate.
The vanilla note, Colleen.
The vanilla note is accurate, and it makes the whole thing as smooth as coffee.
We just stared in each other's eyes. We were sitting very close.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if this bitch makes a face like we do when we drink tequila, because we like to like telegraph how tequila sucks and how it's annoying that everyone's into it. But and then we drink whiskey as if it's water because
right.
We have problems. They're personal problems and they're addiction problems and they're mood problems. So then we go, I stared her in the eyes and she didn't do it. Did you, ma'am?
I didn't.
Because it was smooth down the gullet.
Drinking a beverage.
And Colleen, I want you to know, we are not even done with the 10-day J-Lo challenge. No, I think J-Lo would approve.
I think she would, too. How could you not just try that?
We have to.
You know?
We had to. It's been a long time coming. And it really made Scrunchie 19.
It really did.
You know what I mean?
It's amazing.
So thank you so much.
Yeah.
So, so much, Colleen.
Thank you.
I'm sorry we had to. It's great that it's today, too, of all, in this podcast of all times, Colleen.
Yeah.
So we love you and thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, so another quick note. We have to order more extra large I Don't Need Your Notes, Babe shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take pre-orders for XXL, and we might even do XXXL.
Yep.
Now, the prob is our esteemed digital artist, Jennifer Johnson, has to put... There's no way for them to pre-order. Like, somebody went on there and was like, I can't remember who, and was like, how the fuck are we supposed to pre-order? I'm like, good call, good call, good call. Yeah, you're right about that. Right. Good thinking. So what you guys can do is leave a message on the Patreon or leave a message on our website, www.julianbrandy.com, and tell us that you will order an XL until we get Jennifer Johnson. We haven't even asked Jennifer. She'll probably sense this in the air and do it, because that's how, like, on top of everything she is. We haven't asked her yet, but... And let us know if you think you want an XXL, because why shouldn't you have one?
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Exactly.
It's all just
have
about our
want.
Budget.
Have what you need. Have what you want. Have what you need.
That's right. So we're only doing the XXL and the XXXL, 3XL and 2XL in I Don't Need Your Notes, Babe.
Okay.
Because we just don't have the funds, meow meow.
Sure don't.
Also, no one else cares about drugs. Yeah. No one knows I'm gay. Or a podcast shirt. They're just not as popular as I Don't Need Your Notes, Babe.
Hey.
So, you know what? Well, you know what? Gemma, our British girlfriend, ordered one all the way to England, drugs. I was like, that's right, Gemma.
That's
wear
nice.
That around your baby and your cats and your husband.
Yeah.
And your kids that you teach at school.
Yeah. That's good.
Because that's
school.
What I want my teacher to wear.
I would die if my teacher wore that.
Mm. I love Gemma. And you do too, meow meow.
I do too.
Okay. So our Patreon subscriber, Christy Koch, sent us a little care package of office supplies, which I am currently using the blue notepad right now.
Yes, you are. And the pen.
There's a pink Sharpie. Yeah,
yeah.
It's so great. It's a blue and then a light pink Sharpie.
Yeah.
She gave us a book, a little like a blank book that says do what you love, a candle for fake-a-phobia. You burn it. It gets the fake people away.
We've already burned that.
When meow meow cut the cheese. She cut the cheese, you guys, on the Patreon. And we lost one of the dogs. It was a toxic.
I mean.
It was a toxic blast, similar to Watchmen, if anyone's watching that. I thought a squid came through the sky. A dog lost their life.
The whole neighborhood fell out of their houses with bloody eyes.
We had to burn Chris. I was like, I can't. We haven't even thanked Christy. I got to open this candle. I was like, fumbling.
She didn't just burn the candle. She blowtorched the entire, you know, like,
I mean,
the candle and the box.
I was with a gas mask trying to get
it's
the candle
out
of
the
box.
It's because of the cleanse.
So, and then she got us a couple coasters with chihuahuas on them, a magnet that says OMG, just so many cute little
Very
office
cute.
Things
yeah.
that brighten up our drug den / office / podcast studio. So thank you, Christy.
Yep. Today's a banner day because we got brand new iPhones and we must thank our AT&T loyalty associate, Chris, who was...
And Eduardo.
Everything. Oh, and Eduardo.
Chris sent Eduardo to our homes.
To
and
our
Eduardo
homes.
Came in. I'm sure he probably, too bad that we didn't have the tequila, because we really could have been like, Eduardo, please step into our home. That's our tequila.
Eduardo told me that he and his entire family loves Nacho Libre.
Oh, because he meant Nacho.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we loved Chris. He hooked it up. We will give you guys a little tidbit, the 14 listeners, because we love you. And this is our little payback to you. And when I tell you, I swore everyone to secrecy. I told Julie, I was like, do not even fucking tell your parents about this deal. I'm sorry. Your mom and dad do not get this iPhone until I make sure I get mine. I don't know if they're going to run out of stock. Because we found out about this like 2 weeks ago. And we had to wait for our billing cycle, whatever.
Right.
We just happened to have the same day switchover, man.
Weird, I know.
So I'm sure we signed up for AT&T on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
If you want... If you're not a fucking clout chaser with iPhones, which we aren't, we don't give a shit. I wish I still had my 5. I use a 6S and I love it and I would have it forever. But Apple, throwaway technology. I would love to get a Samsung and just be like, throw a middle finger to Steve Jobs right in his grave. I'd dig him up and I'd flip him right the fuck off. I don't even care. However, I'm stuck. I'm in the golden iPhone handcuffs.
Yeah.
You are too.
Yep.
If you are up for an upgrade, or if you don't even do that shit, because I don't even do it. I don't even do Nextel or whatever it's called. Next plan.
Nextel.
Just whatever the fuck.
Uh-huh.
You can get an iPhone 8. Meow Meow and I got iPhone 8s.
Mm-hmm.
Not the 8 Plus.
No.
And by the way, I know men will be like, and Meow Meow lesbians will be like, I need a plus. No. I know people can't see. They like a big phone. I find it garish, personally. Just get a mini iPad, then. But we got 8 Plus, regular size, uh-huh. regular weed, honey, mm-hmm. for free. If
yes.
everyone's listening, listen on up. Linda, James, Yanni, get on. Johnny can't do it, because that motherfucker is giant.
Needs a big, come on. Yeah.
He's Jack in the Beanstalk, and he needs an actual iPad size.
Yeah.
Well, Linda, take your delicate hands on down. Linda's more got a Paris Hilton, like, mm-hmm. long limb, yeah. long finger vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Get that free iPhone 8, you guys. All you have to do is pay the stupid taxes. There's
yeah.
hidden fees, but it's zero on your bill every month. It's free. Brand new.
2-year contract. But good. In 2 years, all those phones will be perfected.
Call up AT&T. Ask for Chris in the loyalty department.
Oh,
and
God.
Let him know Julian Brandy sent you, because mm-hmm. he's... the shit.
The shit. The poo. Take a whiff.
Take a big whiff, honey.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Now it's time for Eye of the Shitstorm.
You take some shit, put it up on the wall, check it out for a while. You take that shit up off of the wall, put it down on the floor in a glass bowl. You take some fuck, put it up on the wall where the shit used to be.
Okay, so the impeachment inquiry hearings are in full effect with no signs of slowing down. There are tons more witnesses on the schedule for this week, but all we want to think about are the Democratic debates and our upcoming Thanksgiving leftovers. So we're going to skip the Eye of the Shitstorm today and go right into a segment that we love, but rarely get the chance to do, called Making Connections.
Mm. Another heart has made the trade.
This is a relatively new segment called Making Connections, where we connect with someone more successful than us in an attempt to make ourselves look admirable and accomplished to our 14 listeners. And if at any point in the interview there's a good opening, we will hit said guest up for a job and or other connections that could benefit us in the future.
And we are very excited about connecting with our very connected guest today. He's a lawyer whose name is synonymous with Stormy Daniels. And if you don't know who that is, who the fuck cares? Kylie Jenner obviously didn't know. She named her goddamn baby Stormy. So
now you might already think you know who our guest is today. But what you don't know is that this slim, tan, fit, telegenic legal eagle has been fighting the establishment and gaining a name for himself over the years with his fearless demand for justice and his constant fight for the underdog.
Besides Stormy Daniels, he's represented a shit ton of celebrities, from Paris Hilton to Christina Aguilera to Don Henley. He's known in legal circles as a bad boy who gets good results.
And he sure does. This motherfucker has over $1 billion in verdicts and settlements in his favor. He's won a million awards. He's been on every single news show, morning show, talk show. I mean, every single one known to mankind. He's hot, he's funny, and he's notoriously well-connected. So it's about goddamn time that we make some connections with Michael Avenatti. Hi, hey, Michael.
I've got all kinds of jobs for both of you after that intro.
Good. Thank you. Yes. Accomplished.
Oh, I want to work at a law firm.
Wow, that was easy.
That's it.
Just get your parrot. You can clean it.
Hello, Avenatti and Associates. This is Julie speaking. How may I help you?
I mean, you're both clearly very good liars, so.
Oh.
So excellent liars.
Well, that's true.
Now, okay.
Go ahead.
Julie, the first off the bat. Julie's obsessed with your body, and she swears that you do Ironman competitions. Is she right or insane?
Only in the bedroom.
Oh, my God. What is your workout?
Seriously.
Do you do marathons,
I know that
triathlons?
Here's what I've said, and I've said it publicly, okay?
She said it 1,000 times.
Officer, I've said it publicly. I've said, imagine you have bike shorts under those pants, because I feel like you are doing 27 miles of biking a day. I feel like when you're done with work, you rip your clothes off and you have the slim, tight thing that's got like words on it. You get on the bike, you ride, then you're like, I'm gonna pop in for a swim. You swim another 20 miles, then you run home from being 75 miles away.
I mean, you don't think I wear like a unitard, right? I just want to make sure.
Not
that,
a onesie.
Not a onesie.
You're not an
no
animal.
Yes.
You're not an animal. Yes. Yes. I'm talking about
the racing outfit.
The racing outfit. Because
she would say
fit.
This the first time we saw you on TV. She's like, I feel like that guy has literally like a bike jersey on under that. And he's going to ride his like 10 speed home from this interview.
Because you look fit.
Well, thank you. Thank
you're welcome.
You know, I'm not as fit today, actually, as I was before the whole Stormy Daniels lawsuit and journey began. Because, you know, that took up an enormous amount of time every day. But, you know, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's
you're
very
welcome.
Nice of you.
You're welcome.
Go, meow, meow.
I did? Okay.
Wow, I should have done this podcast a long time ago.
Okay, now, speaking of Stormy, you became a household name when you stormed, thank you, onto the scene representing Stormy Daniels. Most people would mistakenly assume that made your career, but as we looked into, that is not the truth. Now, I'm going to read the tweet that you have pinned on the top of your Twitter, okay? This is your tweet. Before Stormy, 1, over a billion in verdict settlements as lead counsel, 2, multiple high-profile cases on 60 Minutes, etc., 3, third largest verdict in the country in 2017 for $454 million, 4, named to top 40 under 40 in California in 2007, 5, trial lawyer of the year award in 2009. So that was pre-Stormy. So tell us what's going on post-Stormy.
Well, you know, I think one of my biggest frustrations actually is that a lot of people defined me by the Stormy Daniels case. So it had a lot of positives, obviously, for my career and my life, but there's also a lot of negatives that have gone along with that. And that matter has, at least in the public arena, defined me. And, you know, that's unfortunate because I'll say this, you know, I'm a hell of a trial lawyer. I'm really good in a courtroom. And I've been really good for a long time. And I don't say that to be egotistical, but it's a fact. I'll try any case anywhere against anybody in the United States, and I have confidence in my abilities in that regard. Now, there's a lot of other things in life that I'm not any good at, but that's one of the things that I'm actually
fidelity.
Pretty good at.
Commitment. Intimacy. Just throwing it out there. Just spitballing.
Have we met before? that Stormy Daniels matter has kind of defined me. People see me in a lot of ways as a TV lawyer, and because there's all these lawyers that are on television that haven't been in a courtroom in decades. Like I can't. Let's take Rudy Giuliani for a minute.
Ugh.
Rudy Giuliani. I don't know the last time he gave an opening or closing statement in a courtroom, cross-examined a witness, argued a motion, argued before a jury. It's probably been at least 20 years. And there's numerous other examples of attorneys that you see on television, these legal pundits and so-called experts. They haven't set foot in a courtroom in decades.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that is a good
point.
What
about that lady?
What lady?
That lady that always goes with all the women?
Gloria Allred.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Does she go
and
in
her
court?
Daughter, too.
I don't know the last time that she was in a courtroom. I know Lisa, her daughter, has been in a courtroom. But
yeah.
I don't know the last time Gloria Allred was in a courtroom, frankly.
It's so interesting. I never thought about it.
I didn't either.
But that's a good point.
And we were also talking, too. We were wondering, like, when you're a trial lawyer like that, you're not technically a defense attorney. You're, what is it? You're like a general attorney?
Well, you're known, I guess most trial attorneys are known as plaintiff's attorneys because they represent plaintiffs predominantly. Most of your high-profile, successful trial attorneys will represent plaintiffs on a contingency basis, frankly, because, you know, for many, that's where most of the money's at. You know, if you succeed in those cases, you get a percentage of the winnings as opposed to working on an hourly basis. And you end up supporting people or representing people, I should say, who otherwise could not afford that level of legal talent because they don't have the money to take out of their pocket and pay an attorney on a per hour basis. So not all trial attorneys, not all exceptional trial attorneys work on the plaintiff side, but I would say that probably 75% of them do. So, you know, going back to your question, though, I mean, clearly, you know, the Stormy Daniels matter and what transpired with that has changed, you know, my career and my life in a lot of ways. But, you know, here's something a lot of people don't understand, and this has really never been talked about. You got to understand, when Stormy Daniels came to me, Stormy Daniels was not interested in removing the president from office, displacing Donald Trump. She wasn't a Donald Trump hater. In fact, I think she may have voted for him in 2016.
See everyone?
Okay. What Stormy Daniels was upset about was, Stormy Daniels was upset because she had entered into this NDA agreement, gotten paid $130,000, and she felt like, and she was correct, that Michael Cohen had breached the agreement and he was running his mouth to the Wall Street Journal, and she was very upset that she couldn't talk as well. Yeah. She didn't like the inequity in this, okay? So Stormy Daniels came to me with this NDA. She didn't come to me looking to displace the president. Now, at the time that Stormy Daniels came to me and wanted me to represent her, I had just had this $454 million jury verdict. I had nearly 20-year career of being a highly successful attorney. I had a lot of opportunities to represent a lot of people. And let me just tell you something. I wouldn't roll out of bed to represent somebody on a $130,000 NDA. I just wouldn't. I wasn't at that place in my career. Now, back up 15, 17 years prior, that's a different story. I didn't get involved in the Stormy Daniels case because I wanted to assist her necessarily in getting out of the NDA and just have that be it. I assisted Stormy Daniels and took on that representation, put my career, put my family, put myself on the line, really hung it all out there for one reason and one reason only. And that was because I thought it could take down a president.
Right. But she didn't. Her thing was like, I just want to be able to talk. If Michael Cohen's going to talk about it, I want to talk about it, too.
That was her initial ask. That's what she wanted. And I saw the bigger picture because of my experience in the law and because of my experience in politics and my knowledge of campaign finance law. When I looked at the NDA and learned what had happened, I immediately saw that Trump had a significant problem, that they had committed criminal acts in the payment of this $130,000, and this could potentially cause him to be removed from the presidency. And that's what intrigued me at that point in my career.
Yeah. Well, exposing him was, I mean, everything, that regardless alone of what happened, yeah. You know? I mean, clearly, there's nothing. He can go shoot someone in the street. Nothing will happen. But yeah. I thought campaign finance was always just handled with a fine.
Well, no, there's been other cases that where the Department of Justice has sought criminal charges and brought criminal charges. For instance, Edwards down in North Carolina. Now, they were unsuccessful in that prosecution, but they did bring a criminal prosecution against him. But, you know, the other thing that intrigued me about representing Stormy was the fact that I was going to go up against, you know, the most powerful man on the planet. And I've made a career and I've taken on the biggest, baddest corporations and many powerful individuals over the years. And I was excited by that. And I like a challenge. And I also understood that I was going to be fighting somebody in the media, that this was going to be fought in the courtroom, but it was also going to be fought from a PR and a media standpoint. And I was going to go up against somebody that is very good at managing media cycles and running press and knows how to play the game. And I liked that challenge. And, you know, I think a lot of legal pundits criticize various things that I did along the way, but they don't understand you can't litigate every case the same. This is a different case. When you're litigating a case against the president of the United States, especially a guy like this, you have to use a different set of tools that you otherwise would use. You don't use the same tools if you were litigating against some corporation in downtown Los Angeles. It's a different ballgame.
Did you represent Karen McDougal too?
No, but I had many a conversation with Ms.
McDougal. Who was better in bed, Stormy Daniels or Karen McDougal?
You know, I had no intimate relations, to be clear, with either one of them. Although many people asked that question, they assume that I had intimate relations.
It's because you're so fit.
I thought there was some chemistry with Stormy. I know John Heidelman on the show you did with him, the circus or whatever. He definitely thought you guys boned down. I was getting that vibe.
Look, you know what? I like John. One of the reasons I like John is that he likes Great Danes. He has Great Danes, and I have a Great Dane. And so
that's cool.
Great Dane.
You know,
yeah.
So we have that in common. I think they do a great show on that. Great job on that show. They crashed that show in like 4 days, and the quality of what they put out is amazing. So I'm a big fan of that show. But going back to your question, you know, I don't know which one was better in bed. I know which relationship lasted a lot longer.
That's
so
true.
That was Karen McDougal, right? Because she thought they were boyfriend, girlfriend or whatever.
So did this ruin your life? Like, would you not do it again?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because I ask myself that question at least once or twice a day.
Yeah.
And it depends on the day. You know, I have days where I say, there's no way in hell I would do this again. And I have other days that I say, yeah, I would do it. I will say this. There's been a lot of sacrifice associated with this. It may have ruined my life. I don't know. I took it for the right reasons, though. I got involved for the right reasons, because I think that Donald Trump is a threat to the democracy that we have and a threat to the republic. I firmly believe that if he's reelected again, it could be the end of the United States as we know it. I know that's a bold statement, but I stand behind it. This man has really put us on a path to destruction, in my view, that we may never recover from. And I'm very concerned about this country. I love this country. I had a lot of opportunity growing up in this country. I consider myself a true patriot. And so, you know, I guess it's too early for me to answer that question. You know, I'm going to have to wait and see how things play out. Obviously, I have some legal challenges that I'm having to face now. We're going to see what happens in 2020. We're going to see if he's reelected or not. And if he's no longer president of the United States and we're able to put the country back on track, then, you know, who knows? Maybe I did a small part to make that happen.
Well, we want to find out about your legal troubles, or tell our 14 listeners about them. But I do want to say, like, obviously what you did was incredible, and you'll come down on the right side of history. It's not like the OJ lawyers where everyone's like,
right,
oh, good, glad you died.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Like, you know, right. You didn't do anything wrong. If anyone like talks any shit, they're just jealous, and you know, it's like, it might have ruined your life, but you can change your priorities. You know, I mean, you can change, you can just take a different path in life, but it was obviously, it was well worth it, and it was
certainly the beginning of the takedown. You were the only person when Stormy Daniels came out and that whole thing came out, it was like, this guy is the only one who's like talking roughly, at least, or a little aggressively, or a little like wanting to get into the fight, and you were the only one doing it, and so for that, it's like that started, that gave a few people some courage, it gave a little bit of fire to some other people, and they should be thankful to you for that.
Well, you know, it was interesting, because in September, October of last year, you know, Beto O'Rourke, who was on his, you know, he was on his run where everybody loved him in the press, and I knew that was never going to last. But he was interviewed by the New York Times, and he was asked about me, and he said, "Well, Michael Avenatti doesn't represent, you know, most of us Democrats." And I had to laugh about that, and I thought, you know what? Number one, I don't think that's true, and number two, if it is true, it's a significant problem, because here's been the problem with the Democrats for a long period of time, and I've been talking about this for a long time. They're not rough enough. They're not tough enough. They're not fighters. You know, I had a Democratic, high-level Democratic operative tell me, I was in a green room last year, and she summed it up best. She said, "You know what, Michael?" She said, "It was when I was thinking about running for the presidency." And she said, "I think you should absolutely run." I said, "Why is that?" And she said, "The Democratic Party has a lot of talent, but they don't have a lot of fighters." And that's always been true, and it's become so much more important now because we have this madman in the White House. And this guy's a brawler. You can say a lot of things about him, and I do say a lot of things about him. But you can't say that he's not a fighter or a brawler, or he won't go to the mat, because he will. And what the Democrats don't understand is you're not going to beat that guy by talking about puppies and daisies. You want to beat that guy? Guess what? You're going to have to nominate somebody, as distasteful as it might be, that's a little like him, that can scrap with him, that can get down in the gutter. Now, that doesn't mean that once you win, you govern that way. But what Democrats don't understand is you don't win, you don't govern.
Right.
And this is a very unique situation right now. And the Democrats better figure this out, and they better make sure that they nominate somebody that can actually scrap with this guy and trade blows with him, because that's what it's going to take. Now, look, am I happy about that? Do I wish it was different? Of course I wish it was different, but it's not different. We got to be real about what we're facing right now. You know, I said a few months ago, I said, you know, Donald Trump in a lot of ways is the kryptonite for the Democratic Party. And what I mean by that is he represents everything that Democrats hate, everything that they loathe. But you're not going to beat him by nominating somebody that represents everything Democrats love, because he will crush them.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's, yeah. And that's the problem. I mean, that is a significant problem. And look, the guy is a moron about 95% of things in life, but he's brilliant and exceptional about 5% of those things, 5% of things in life. And one of those things is he's a brawler. He's really good on messaging. He's got some pretty good political instincts, actually. He's got great energy out on
the
stump.
He's funny. He's entertaining.
He you know, and yeah. He holds in today's society, when you see how people get their information on social media, et cetera, he can hold. You're absolutely right. He can hold an audience, and he can change the script, if you will, on a moment's notice and change emphasis. I mean, you know, he's smart in that regard, and he's not to be underestimated.
Okay, so what can you tell us about the trouble that you're in? Like, can you say anything? Like, who were you in trouble with? Were you framed?
Well, here's what I'll say. I'm very limited in what I can get into as it relates to details in these cases. I really can't get into any of the details. But, you know, there's no question in my view that I would not be facing what I'm facing had I not taken on the president of the United States. The Department of Justice has been absolutely weaponized against his enemies at this point. I never thought, I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's true. I never thought that that would actually happen. It's not just me. It's others. The Department of Justice is being used by Trump.
Yeah, I've heard that nobody can believe it.
You know, I never thought that this day would come. But, you know, look, I'm facing some significant legal challenges. There's no question about that. But if you want to eat an elephant, you got to eat it one bite at a time. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to take these matters one by one. The first matter is going to go to trial in January, this case where I allegedly extorted Nike, which is one of the most absurd things that anyone has ever heard.
We talked to a very rich, very successful, renowned defense lawyer. I'm not going to say his name, but he told us that he couldn't even believe that was the most ridiculous thing he's ever heard. It's just a thing lawyers do. It's just a joke.
I've been charged in that case for doing my fucking job.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah.
All right, just to be clear,
right?
I was charged in that case for doing my fucking job, and if I'm going to be charged in that case, then you're going to have to charge thousands of lawyers every day across this country. You know, it's absurd. I feel I got to be careful because I'm going to get ahead of myself.
Yeah.
I got to be careful because I don't want to say anything more because I get really passionate about this because it's so outrageous. But look, if I didn't take on the president and if I wasn't a threat, that wouldn't have happened.
You know,
it's clear that I was a threat and they knew I was a threat.
Can you say in this particular thing with this case, is this the kind of thing where you're going to go into a courtroom and the judge and everyone in the room is going to be like, oh, God, this is just wasting everybody's time? Like,
maybe it won't.
We're
even
just
going
to have to go through the motion of this.
Well, yeah,
and
I mean,
we've
made some motions to dismiss it. We'll see. I mean, that's a very that's a very high burden. You know, look, anytime the power of the government is brought to bear against you, especially in a criminal proceeding, it's a very serious matter. I mean, the decks are stacked against defendants in this country. You know, even people like myself who understand the process and have resources and have people that are willing to defend them. You know, it's a very tall task to defend matters like this. But I am confident that when it's all said and done, I'm going to be exonerated.
One good thing in your favor was that the day that all happened was the day that those motherfuckers like got caught with the college scandal. I remember that. I was like, well, he's pretty lucky that this whole thing is happening with like Aunt Becky or whatever now, because it was the exact same day from what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're now telling our 14 listeners, but I think a lot of people don't know. I think what most people know about you now is that Stormy Daniels was talking shit on Twitter. I think that's what people think is what you're dealing with.
Well, and you know, look, I mean, we're going to play that out as well. I mean, people are going to learn a lot of details and a lot of facts about what transpired between me and Stormy. And you know, look, it's going to be a fight for credibility, and it's going to be very interesting to see.
Why
where
did
the
she
chips
turn
fall.
On you?
You know, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think I don't know exactly what has transpired, frankly. You know, I have some speculation, which I'm not going to offer right now. But, you know, look, there's a lot of water left to go under the bridge in connection with that matter. And
probably
a lot
none of this is even going to even see the light of day. I bet it all just ends up. Poor Stormy Daniels, even though I can't stand her, she's probably being blackmailed or whatever the hell. Like, it's just I don't really see any of it actually going very far. I mean, I don't know. Do you?
Well, from your lips to God's ears, we'll see.
Well, I'm curious to know, or we're curious to know, do you ever feel like you're in danger? Do you ever feel like, you know, like they're coming after you legally, let's say the Trump and whatever. Do you ever feel like...
Yeah, did you think Michael Cohen was going to roll up with his, I mean, with his beer belly and be like, you're going to have to put him in like an MMA like fucking headlock or like a... half Nelson or what?
No, I'm very conscious of what's going on around me, and I've had to become very conscious.
Yeah.
It was very you know, less so now, but I'm still, it depends where I am, but I'm still very cautious. And you know, at the height of this, I mean, there was constant death threats against me and my family, and you know, people get my cell phone number. They send me, you know, text messages where they threaten my teenage daughters and send me pictures of guns and all kinds of. There is a lot of fucking. Mm-mm. There is a lot of fucking whacked out people out there. Many of whom support Trump. Many of whom are upset with me because I had the audacity to take on, you know, their president, quote unquote, and speak truth to power. And they don't like that. And that's why. You know, I've got tens of millions of Americans that love me, and I've got tens of millions of Americans that hate me. And no matter what happens, the tens of millions of Americans that hate me will always hate me.
You.
They'll always hate me because I had the audacity to take on Donald Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that also, I wonder with you, with your political desires, do you still have political?
You know, it's funny because I was very active in politics in the 90s. I worked on over 150 campaigns in 42 states. And if you would have asked me in the 90s, what are you going to do? I would have said, I'm going to go to law school and then I'm going to prepare for a career in politics and I'm going to run for office. And who knows, maybe someday I'll run for the presidency, because I was a political animal during those 6 or 7 years. I mean, I worked on every big case in the U.S. other than presidential races, and I was highly active. And then I got completely burnt out. And I saw the soft underbelly of politics, and I said, you know what, I'm done. And so after 1997, I thought that I would never get involved in politics again. And, you know, had I thought that I would be involved in politics, there's a bunch of stuff that I did that I would not have done, and there's a bunch of stuff that I should have done that I didn't do. And so even if you would have backed up a month or a week or a day before I met Stormy Daniels and that whole thing took off, or even in the very beginning stages, I had no desires or interest in necessarily running for anything or being involved politically. And what happened was that whole thing took off and really beyond even my expectations. When I went to New York, when we filed the case, I had like 3 or 4 days worth of clothes. I came back 21 days later to L.A. to get clothes. I was here 24 hours. I went back to New York. I did not anticipate that that whole thing would catch fire the way it did, and that people would be so taken by somebody actually speaking truth to power and standing up to this guy. And so I started to, you know, I started to adapt to the situation, and people started seeing me kind of as a leader of the left, a leader of the resistance. And I pushed back on that for a long time. And the reason why I pushed back on it, frankly, was because I didn't want that case to become politicized. I know it sounds crazy as we sit here now, but initially I wanted that case to be all about the facts. It's about an NDA, whether it was signed or not, whether there were parties to the agreement, has it been violated, et cetera. I wanted it to be very factual, and I did not want it politicized. And then, you know, sooner or later, I said to myself, you know what? People want to make me this leader of the left. Okay, I'll be the leader of the left. Let's go.
What did you do on campaigns? And did you ever meet Trump before you had dealing with Trump in the Trump time?
So I used to do opposition research and media relations back in the 90s on campaigns. So I was pretty well versed in how you can use information and how you can leak information to the press and how you can utilize the press and campaigns, which I think ultimately served me well in connection with this matter. And then I met Trump twice. Once I had a prior lawsuit against him and Mark Burnett over the Apprentice, where I represented a client along with a couple exceptional lawyers here in Los Angeles. I was a junior lawyer at the time. It was really their case, but our client had come up with the idea of the Apprentice.
Legitimately,
not like, you know, oh, I came up with Star Wars, you know, 10 years after the fact. I'm talking about this guy actually came up with the idea. He went to Mark Burnett's producer, assistant producer, pitched the idea, and basically Burnett and Trump stole the idea from him. And we filed suit, and we successfully settled that lawsuit. I met Trump in connection with that case because he was deposed in connection with that case. And then the second time I met Trump, I was dating a woman who I ultimately married. We were in a bar at Boa off of Sunset. It was early on in our relationship, and I walked up to the bar to get her a glass of wine, and I came back, and Trump was all over her, like looking her up and down.
Classic.
And talking to her and the whole bit.
Wow.
So that was pretty funny. That was a pretty funny moment.
Tom Arnold told us when he came on here that Mark Burnett got a dog and didn't want it anymore and had it put down. And basically, Tom believed that Mark Burnett basically had the dog killed because he didn't want it anymore. Somehow, Julie lezzed out and created a scenario in her mind where Mark Burnett killed this dog with his bare hands. Like, she's like, we should ask Michael if he thinks Mark Burnett killed the dog with bare hands. I'm like, no one ever said that.
Okay. Your Honor, I want to say that here's the other facts in the case. Allegedly, Mark Burnett was trained in like MI5, like ops.
Like black ops or
black
some
ops
shit. According
or whatever
to Tom
the fuck.
Again.
And he got like some special breed of dog, got it as a puppy, couldn't take it anymore. And then the trainer came to one day to train the dog. The dog's dead. Dog's gone. I do believe Mark Burnett killed the dog. I think he killed the dog with his own hands.
With his bare hands.
I would like to know if you, in meeting Mark Burnett, think he's capable of killing a dog.
Do I think Mark Burnett is capable of killing a dog? I think I think probably anybody is capable,
capable. Okay. All right. Let me ask the question.
Do you think he put the dog to sleep, or do you think he took the dog out behind the barn and shot it with Roma Downey lingering on?
I have no idea, and I love Tom Arnold. Tom's a friend of mine. He's a good guy, but if you're gonna make this pitch,
I will.
Might I suggest that you find perhaps another witness?
Yeah, one more source.
I don't need it.
All right.
This is why I can't be a lawyer or a judge.
Or she can't be alone with Tom because she comes back and she's like, Mark Burnett strangled the dog and threw it off a cliff.
I can't. I know that's
Well, she loves
libelous.
Dogs. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I love dogs.
I just don't understand how a person just kills their dog because they don't want the dog. I just can't deal
and
with
can
it.
And can you sue a vet for putting a dog
yes,
to
sleep?
Yes,
that's my question. Yes. Can you sue a vet if you bring a dog in that's perfectly healthy, you don't bring it to a shelter, you bring it into a vet and go, can you just kill this? Is that legal?
It likely is, unfortunately, legal in most states because in most states, dogs are considered property as opposed to...
I'm horrified.
I know. That's crazy.
Right
do now. Your Great Danes have balls
I'm horrified right now.
Still, or do you get them cut off?
Well, my Great Dane is a female.
Okay, good. Usually people with Great Danes leave the balls on and they're enormous and it's just a thing where it's like...
Too much.
Yeah, it's a little too much. You
That's
know?
Cool.
I bet you John Heidelman or whatever has his balls on his Great Dane. We should ask him. I'm going to tweet him and ask him.
Tweet him and ask him if he has a female dog or a male dog.
Wow, I'm fighting the urge to comment on this, but go ahead.
You can.
Here's what I think. I was going to save this for the end. I might have Meow Meow put it at the end, but I really think this is some good genius advice for you. I don't know if you have the time. I think that you should, with all of your expertise in opposition research, I think you should pro bono, even though this could get you killed, but it'd be worth it. I think you should do opposition research on Mitch McConnell.
Ugh.
And single-handedly get that motherfucker out of office, and you will become I mean, it's not even, it's not even a hero. It's an icon, a legend. Talk about leader of the resistance. Like, yeah. Everyone is looking for Mitch McConnell to be gone. He obviously has 1,000 cocaine-filled skeletons in the closet, not to mention the fucking wife. Like, it's got to be not that hard to find, especially for you, since you know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's interesting advice, actually.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Mitch McConnell is a significant problem as it relates to our ability to continue to operate as a nation.
At this point, we consider him the president.
Yeah,
and we can't take it.
Oh, well, I've said, you know, often over the last 6 weeks that's the most important relationship on the face of the planet, Trump and McConnell. I mean, that's the most important relationship to Trump. If Mitch McConnell turns on Trump, he's done. It's over.
It would just be so great if he was out. I mean,
and out and humiliated and out.
I don't even care.
Exposed.
Just out. Yeah. Just gone.
And look, I mean, stranger things have happened. If Mitch McConnell, who's up for election, of course, re-election, if he concludes that Trump could cost the Republicans the Senate or could cost McConnell his seat in Kentucky, Mitch McConnell will cut Trump loose quicker than you can imagine, because it'll all be about self-preservation. Mitch McConnell's not going to run for re-election, risk his seat, be elected, and then serve in the minority of the U.S. Senate. He doesn't want that. So that's the key. The key is that if McConnell loses faith in Trump's ability, forget about winning the White House or not, but if McConnell loses faith in Trump's ability to actually help them maintain the Senate, it's over.
That's interesting. Yeah, because he's just a power monger.
If you were to run for president, or when you were thinking about it, and you looked around at the landscape of the candidates that were there, what did you think that you could bring to the table, or what would you do differently than the other candidates that are there now?
No, it's a great question. And look, I spent a lot of time thinking about this. I traveled around the country. I raised money for a lot of Democrats, spent a lot of time in the key swing states, especially in Ohio and other places in Pennsylvania, et cetera, because my belief was that if you could not understand what happened in those jurisdictions in 2016, then you could not fix it for 2020. And if you could not appeal to voters there, you're not going to beat Donald Trump. And this is a six-state race, okay? I love California. I love New York. I spend most of my time in those two places. Love South Florida. Guess what? That's not where this election is going to be decided. It's going to be decided in six states. Now, we can bitch and complain and talk about the Electoral College, et cetera, but it's not changing between now and 2020.
Yeah.
And there's too many Democrats that have not come to the realization that this is a six-state race. Okay, so to the Democrats that are listening, and of the 14 people that are listening, I'm guessing
yes.
Most of them are Democrats, all right? You need to understand something. It doesn't matter about the popular vote. It doesn't mean shit. And the only thing that matters is who is the person that can beat Donald Trump in these five or six states. Because I could envision a scenario where Donald Trump could lose the popular vote by 6 million.
Oh my God.
And be reelected. And if you think people were upset the morning after in 2016, and that was before we knew what a disaster, a dumpster fire of a president this guy would be, imagine what people would think. So I spent a lot of time in these key swing states.
What are they?
And, well, the key swing states are Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, North Carolina, and Arizona.
North Carolina's purple?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, Arizona,
that's right. Did I say Florida?
No, you didn't say Florida.
Okay, so Ohio, okay. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, North Carolina, Arizona, seven.
Not Texas.
No.
No, no. And a lot of people actually think that
Texas.
Ohio, a lot of people at this point say, you know, it's either six or seven, because a lot of people are just counting Ohio out at this point. They think that Ohio may be lost for the Democrats. They may be right about that. But I made 25 trips across about 3 months to those key states when I was thinking about running. So look, too many Democrats are focused on, in my view, the perfect candidate. You can't let the good candidate be the perfect candidate be the enemy of the good. Okay, you just can't. You're not gonna. This isn't gonna be a revolutionary election, ladies and gentlemen. I know you want that. I know a lot of you would really like to see that.
That's a really good point, you guys.
Okay,
listen,
this is not gonna be the revolution. You are not going to unseat Donald Trump with a revolutionary candidate. And let me just give you this stat, okay? We've been around for over 200 years in this country. In the history of the United States, there has never been an incumbent president who was run for re-election with a decent economy and lost. It has never happened in the history of this country. Now, we've never had a madman like Donald Trump in the presidency, granted. But there's a lot of statistics and a lot of data that suggests that this guy could be, will be reelected. And for that reason, you know, I preach on this every day. It is imperative that the Democrats nominate somebody that can win in those states. Period. That's all that matters.
We have a lot of the 14. They're pretty much spread out in those seven states,
yep.
I would say.
Yep.
So you like Joe Biden then?
I do. I like Joe Biden. Look, do I think Joe Biden, do I wish he was more progressive? Yes. Do I wish, and I'm going to be really candid about this, do I wish that Joe Biden would have run last time? I think if Joe Biden would have run in 2016, we wouldn't be talking about Donald Trump. I wouldn't even be here right now because you wouldn't even know who I was as it relates to the Stormy Daniels case, right? Do I wish that Joe Biden was 20 years younger? Yes. Do I have concerns about whether he's got enough fuel in the tank to get this done through the election? I do. Okay. A lot of people do. Look, I mean, let's not bullshit each other. All these people, this is one of the things I don't like. All these people sit around and they have all these whisper campaigns and they talk about all this shit at these cocktail parties and everything else, but they don't come out publicly and talk about it. Okay. And the bottom line is I have that concern. A lot of other people have that concern. I think he does have enough fuel in the tank. I think it's a legitimate concern. But here's what I know. I know that when I was traveling in all of those states and I was talking to voters up and down all these states, I know how they reacted to discussions about Joe Biden. And it's very favorable.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a small change. A lot of people would say it's a small change from Donald Trump. Okay. But it's an important, I mean, I think it's a significant enough change. It's not a revolutionary candidate. It's not a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren. But look, I don't think Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren can beat Donald Trump in those states. I just don't. And so, and there's a lot of people, a lot of Democrats that actually happen to agree with me. And here's the other thing. Here's the other problem. It's all about the matchup. Okay. I think that Elizabeth Warren, for instance, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, I think they'd both make a much better president than I ever would. No question about it. I mean, they've served time in the U.S. Senate. They have all this policy experience. They have much more governmental experience. They don't have a shot in hell of beating Donald Trump. Me? I would actually have a pretty good shot of beating Donald Trump because it's all about the matchup. Now, you bring in somebody like Romney as the nominee on the Republican side and you run me versus Romney versus Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders against Romney, I'd get crushed. Because that's not a good matchup. That's what people don't understand. It's all about who's going to match up best against Donald Trump. That's really, because, I mean, we got to ask ourselves, what are we trying to do here? I thought that the number one goal, you got to win.
Yeah.
If you don't win, you don't govern it. I don't care how great your policies are. I don't care how many policy books you've put out or how deep you are in policy. I mean, ask Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was the most qualified, competent candidate to ever seek the presidency in the history of the United States, in my view. Forget about whether she's a man or a woman. Nobody was ever more qualified to seek the office than Hillary Clinton. Deep in policy, knowledgeable, smart. Guess what? Didn't matter. You know why? Because she wasn't able to beat Donald Trump in the Electoral College.
Well, that's why if Joe Biden got it, all the more a hero you would be getting Mitch McConnell out, because then it really wouldn't matter. Because that is what would really change. The stranglehold on the Senate makes all the difference. Now, we love Joe Biden. Love. We just went and saw him speak the other day downtown. And I want to say that one of my good friends, she doesn't know who the vice president is right now, but she knows Joe Biden. So I feel like she's not even going to know any of the other candidates' names. So even though you talk about those seven states, the primaries, it's a different thing, though, right? Because they got to get the primary. They got to get elected first. So, and that's going to be decided by California, right? Because California moved up the date that we vote.
Well, I don't know if ultimately it may be over by the time we get to California. It may not be over by the time you get to California. I think Super Tuesday, South Carolina and some of these other states are going to be critically important to who the nominee is. You know, let me also say this. I mean, I've broken bread and spent time with, and I'm very impressed by Mayor Pete. I always have been. Okay, Mayor Pete is the smartest person in the field. Let me just say that. Okay, no question. The guy is brilliant. I think Mayor Pete would make a great president. I have serious concerns about whether Mayor Pete can beat Donald Trump. Now, again, somebody else, different story. I don't know that he can beat Donald Trump. You know, here's the other thing.
Do you think Obama would come out for Biden?
Oh, I think he would. Well, I think Obama's going to come out for whoever the Democrat is.
But do you think he's going to come out for the in the primary?
No, I don't. I think, I mean, I have a pretty good basis of knowledge to know that Barack Obama is going to remain on the sidelines until there is actually a nominee. He's not going to endorse anybody prior to the convention. He's not going to put his finger on the scale. Really? I know that for a fact. It's not.
Have you met Obama? Because I'm going to die. Have you?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Shit's her favorite in the world. That's like her everything.
Yeah. I love Barack Obama. Okay, so well, that's kind of a bummer, though. I mean, whoever he says, who goes.
I like Barack Obama. I don't love Barack Obama. Many people say that. No, but look, I thought he did a good job as president. I think that he was, certainly a revolutionary candidate. Was in a very tough spot. Very difficult to do what he did. There's no question about that. But look. You know, he took a whiff on the Garland seat. I'm sorry. I will never be able
to. That's because of Mitch McConnell.
No, but see, they didn't do anything, though. I mean, I got to tell you.
I agree with what you're saying.
I'm a student of the law. And see, what I recognize is, you know, Mitch McConnell and these guys, I mean, they're not stupid. You know, Mitch McConnell held up all those judicial seats during the Barack Obama administration. And now Trump has been able to fill those seats. And I'm going to tell you, that has a huge impact on American life. You know, presidents come and go, but these judges stay for decades.
And every Democrat is saying, oh, we're not going to stack the court. And I'm like this. Why?
Yeah.
Go ahead and fucking stack it. What really disappointed me was that when the whole Hillary email situation and when they knew Russia was meddling in the election, Obama was told and Mitch McConnell said, if you make an announcement or do a press conference, we're going to say you're playing party politics. So he didn't say anything.
Right. And critical mistake.
That bummed me out. But I just feel like Obama had to walk like, you know, a straighter line. He's just like somebody I look up to. And I think he made the best of bad decisions, like he said. There's things that disappointed me, but I know he couldn't be as like wiling out as he probably wanted to be. And God knows he had to quit smoking and I'm sure he didn't want to.
Well, you know, you asked me what I thought I would bring to the table if I ran. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going to be the fighter of the group. I mean, that was always my persona, and I was going to own it. And look, I was going to be the guy that was going to crawl down in the gutter with Trump and call it like it is and really trade shots with him. And look, I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen that matchup.
Yeah. Oh,
and
absolutely.
I think the debates would have been just off the chain.
I was just going to say, like, you obviously, do we want to see you debate Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Yes, I would. Even if that's not even a real thing, it should be a thing. Like a pay-per-view event, I want you to debate Donald Trump. That should be a thing. But since we're not going to have that, unfortunately, it's like, do I want to see Bernie's insane. I could see him kind of having a fight with Donald Trump, but no one else except Kamala, I think, could get in there and top him down. Maybe Joe Biden can, I don't know. But we do love him, and I loved Joe Biden even when he was vice president. I think he's classy and
he's fit
and
he is
fit, and I always said and I just like it, and he wears a suit nicely.
He has aviators.
Something...
he looks good in those aviators.
Yeah, he
right?
does look good.
I thought he looked good in the aviators.
And,
yeah.
he looked great the other day. He came and he's friendly, he's charismatic, he's charming. He can touch me on the shoulder anytime, he can kiss me on the forehead. I don't care. I'm not bothered. Like he seems like a loving person. I don't know. I like him. So I don't.
Is there any Democrat that's been a fighter in your
good question.
Estimation?
Well, you know, a lot of people forget this, but Bill Clinton was a fighter. I mean, Bill Clinton knew. You know, it's interesting because a lot of people have forgotten that both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, you know, were fighters in at least when they were trying to win the presidency. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton was a scrapper. I mean, they went very dirty in 1992 to win that election. James Carville, they pulled out all the stops. They didn't hold back. You know, it wasn't a...
And that was somebody who didn't get reelected, right? Because that was George Bush who didn't get...
Correct. But the economy had gone... George Bush's approval rating was 81% in 1991 because of the Desert Storm. And then by the time that the election rolled around in 92, his approval rating was 37% because the economy took a significant downturn.
Yeah, he signed something with like the banks or something.
Well, Bush had, and Bush was, he couldn't answer the questions about how much a loaf of bread was and a carton of milk. And,
that's right.
And
he never and, could have answered
right.
that.
Right. And as I recall, there was a whole grocery scanner thing that he didn't know that you could actually like get barcoded groceries at the grocery store.
Like,
that
I
was
have
all
people
she wrote.
Who do that for
that was
me.
All she wrote. Oh, although, God. You know, Trump thinks you have to have you show ID to buy groceries here in the United States. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. I don't remember that, but the fact that people think he's a man of the people or is like a some sort of
yeah, I mean this is a guy that
I just don't understand.
No, this is a guy that has crapped on a gold toilet his entire life and grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth, and this guy is you know the working class president. It's absurd.
What do you think? Like, doesn't that make it like what? How did he trip? What is it? Like, what is it that do you think that he speaks to the people who? Like these people who are like, you know, he's a working man. He with me and the coworkers and then, you know, he's down. And why are they getting that from him?
Well, I think it's a couple things. First of all, the way that he speaks. Okay, he doesn't speak like an elitist. He doesn't. He speaks their language, and that goes a long way. So that's number one. Number two, it's what I said earlier. You know, he's a scrapper. He's a brawler, and they want somebody. Whether they fully agree with them or not, they want somebody that they feel is going to fight for them. Okay, that's number two. And number three, you know, let's be frank. Make America great again? No, it was make America white again. That's really what that was all about. You took an entire, they tapped into, and Trump's too stupid to have come up with it. It was really Bannon and others, and it was brilliant.
Isn't it Reagan?
It was devious, but it was brilliant what they did. And that was that they understood that there was this whole body of the population, okay, all white males that had felt like they had lost all this power over the last 30, 40 years. And guess what? They had lost a lot of power, okay, to women, thank God, to African-Americans, thank God, to minorities, thank God. They still had, make no mistake about it, they still have 65% of the power, if you will, in America,
right.
Okay? You're not prejudiced because you're a white male in America. I'm sorry, you're not going to convince me. And I'm a white guy, and so I can speak to that. But that's a bunch of bullshit. But they convinced these people that, you know what, we're going to make America great again, which means we're going to restore all this power that has been, quote, stripped from you over these last three or four decades. And they tapped into that, and it was highly successful. Yeah. That's why you have—
And it was about money. We all are— I speak for myself. I'm a grotesque, materialistic, capitalist. All I need to hear is somebody talking about, you're going to make money, I'm going to get you a job, money. The minute he got elected, Julie was crying. We were in Mexico. I was like this. I bet I'm going to get like a lot of like acting jobs as like a gold-digging whore now that Melania is first lady. I'm going to be auditioning all the time. Like, that's the kind of mercenary shit I'm thinking about.
How'd that, work out for
it
you?
It didn't really. Shockingly, I was like, where are all my slut
auditions?
Well, that's
the thing. Well, all the people who thought they were going to get whatever jobs that they have, none of it worked
none
out.
None of it panned
and,
out.
And none of it for anyone
none of it
panned
out.
And yet they still support him. And
they
that's
think,
what's
yeah.
just so, I just don't.
From you and Stormy Daniels to this moment, not one thing can take him down. They won't believe anything.
Yeah, it's like, what do you think, as a lawyer even, could you, what would it take to take him down? Really, now that you've gone through this and you thought you had this, you had X, Y, Z, you had A to Z to take him down, and none of it would do it. What will
well,
it take?
Well, I mean, there were a couple rulings in the case from the federal judge that kind of clipped our wings a little bit, and so that had a big impact on. But I mean, look, here's what I think it's going to take. It's going to take somebody to square off with him in a very public setting, i.e., a debate, and embarrass the shit out of him. Okay, it's just like a schoolyard bully. And this is an example I've used even when I was thinking about running. Okay, there's that moment on the schoolyard. You know when the schoolyard bully is no longer the schoolyard bully? When he gets hit in the back of the head with the bat on the school, or he gets knocked on his ass. And the rest of the kids go, you know what, this guy's not that tough anymore.
Yeah.
And see, I think that that's going to be the key if he makes it to election day. I think the key is going to be there's going to be a moment or two in these debates, a window's going to open, and the question's going to be whether the Democrats have nominated the person that can really step into that window, step into that moment, and deliver the knockout blow and embarrass the shit out of this guy. Embarrass him to the point where people are laughing at him. You know, it was very interesting. A very poignant moment happened many, many months ago, probably about 6-9 months ago. He was addressing the UN, and he made some comment about how great he was or how great the or something was. And the members of the UN started laughing at him.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what to do. And I watched this, right? And I was like, you know what? This is a son of a bitch that can't take a punch. Mm-mm. Like, this is a guy that if you cut him, he'll fold. And that's what it's going to have to be. You're going to have to cut him and bury him on the stage. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take somebody to step in and put him away.
Joe Biden's going to have to meet with like 9 drag queens to teach him how to like read him to filth, memorize it. Don't like, because Joe Biden might stutter around. So tell our 14 listeners where they control you and stalk you and, you know, if you want them to.
Well, I already got a lot of trolls, but if you'd like to add to the troll group, you can. I'm on Instagram and on Twitter at Michael Avenatti, AVENATTI.
Okay, well, thank you for talking to us today. It was
awesome.
It was awesome.
Really awesome.
This was fun. So we're going to do this every week, right?
Yeah, it's the Michael Avenatti segment.
Yeah, as soon as I get you guys those jobs that
I want to come down. Yeah, let's get it. I want an office, and I want it to be just like The Good Fight.
Yeah. Probably doesn't even watch that.
That's it for this episode of Dumb Gay Politics.
Thank you guys for listening. I hope you made it all the way to the end. We love all 14 of you, and we're so lucky to have you. If the mood strikes you for the Thanksgiving upcoming lead up to Thanksgiving, leave us an iTunes review. There are only 6 weeks left in Scrunchy 19, and the 3-year anniversary of this podcast, Dumb Gay Politics, is on December 6th. And it would be really fucking dope and huge for us to get up over 1,400 reviews before 2020. I mean, that's basically, there's only like 30. We have like 1,370 or something. So we only need like 30 more. I mean, if we got over 1,400, that would basically mean that all 14 of you have left 100 reviews each. And that would be something, wouldn't it? We could be like, our listeners are so dope, they left 100 reviews each. And look, we even read one, ma'am. Okay. Read that one.
All right. Merlu left a 5-star review on September 11th and simply said, "Normally I listen to Cumtown for all my news, but this is pretty good too."
See how easy it is? It's that easy. It's that fucking easy. Like, honestly, that review warmed my heart. It really did. Normally I listen to Cumtown, but this is pretty good too. I'm like, you're right. This is pretty good. There's other places to get your news, but this is fine.
Yeah, it sure is.
This will do in a pinch.
It sure is.
So thanks, Merlu.
Thanks, Merlu.
I mean, honestly, go on there and say, they're fucking annoying. They get on my nerves. I hate listen. You should too. I'm fine with it. Leave 1 star. We don't care. Just get that shit over 1,400.
Now, if any of you are holding out and trying not to sign up for our Patreon podcast, fuck that. Go do it now. You can hear us talk shit for a whole extra hour podcast for $1, or you can sign up for 2 hours for $2. Just go to www.patreon.com/dumbgaypolitics. This week, we're going to make homemade organic SpaghettiOs from a video that we found on YouTube. Now, supposedly, they taste just as garbagey as Chef Boyardee, but without all the nitrates, and this is going to be very fun.
I hope it is, and I can't wait to eat it and have it in my mouth. I'm so excited. Yeah. I'm dreaming. I'm waiting.
So good.
We had so many options to go off the J-Lo challenge, and this is what we selected.
Yes.
And healthy fucking junk food is lucky we're even promoting them. They don't even know us.
No.
But we are, and you know what? If it sucks, we're going to really rip them a new one on the Patreon. But I think it's good. I trust the dude.
Yeah.
And just watching him eat it, I was like jealous of him. I was like, I know. Give me your SpaghettiOs now, guy.
I'm really going to try. And when we go off of the J-Lo diet, not to go crazy.
Exactly.
I want to keep dieting.
No, we are. We're not going to go crazy. I think we should have 1 treat a week. And I think that we should like have sushi when we want to be like have fun. Sushi's healthy.
Sushi is healthy.
I mean, it's more healthy than spicy fried chicken sandwiches.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to keep trying to stay off soda.
Yep.
But you know you're going to go right back on Red Bull, you whore.
I know. Oh.
We're going to stay on the diets. We're going to stay. We're going to keep it health for the rest of the year. We're going to go out scrunchy 19 like winners. Yep. And the tequila is going to ride or die with us.
Yep.
And as always, it's been real and it's been fun.
But mostly it's been gay and it's been dumb.
And Michael, have a fucking naughty, honey.
Girl!
How'd you do, I? See, you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little brought down because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Let me show you around and maybe play you a sign. You look like you're both pretty groovy. Or if you want something visual that's not too abysmal, we could take in an old Steve Reeves movie.
I'm glad we caught you at home. Could we use your phone? We're both in a bit of a hurry.
Right.
We'll just say where we are, then go back to the car. We don't want to be any worry.
Well, you got caught with a flat wheel. How about that? Well, babies, don't you panic. By the light of the night, it'll all seem all right. I'll get you a satanic mechanic. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Why don't you stay for the night?
Night.
Or maybe a bite.
Bite.
I could show you my favorite obsession. I've been making a man with blonde hair and a tan, and he's good for relieving my tension. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. So, come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation. But maybe the rain is really to blame. So I'll remove the cause. But not the symptom.